Episode 73 of the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm on today with Liz Young. She's the VP of Sales at Reonomy. We're going to be talking about SaaS pricing strategies that work. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So give the listeners some bit of information about you. What's your background?
Sure. I started my sales career at Bloomberg, selling their terminal.
Cool.
To a variety of clients in the Midwest. Really enjoyed it, learned a lot, but loved food and thought I would quit to go to cooking school. And
interesting.
After much deliberation, quality deliberation, decided let's pick something in the middle of selling a financial terminal and going to cooking school, which is selling restaurant technology software.
Ooh, okay.
So I left Bloomberg after a few years and joined an iPad POS company called Breadcrumb that Groupon had acquired.
Yep.
Sold their iPad POS technology. I started off as a frontline salesperson, which was a risk, took a big pay cut to leave Bloomberg.
Right.
Started managing their East Coast sales team after 6 months, and then fast forward another 12, was managing their national team. We grew their team from 5 or 6 sales reps just in New York to 35 sales reps, 4 managers in 3 offices, Chicago, San Francisco, and New York. I moved the whole team from outside to inside.
Where were you, Chicago?
I was based in New York.
New York.
But clocked some quality mileage on United during that time.
Got it. Okay. And then after Breadcrumb, where were you?
So I got a great opportunity in January of this year to join a company called Reonomy, and I've been there ever since.
And what does Reonomy do?
Sure. Reonomy is a Series B 35-person company based right over here in Flatiron that sells commercial real estate analytics and software to anyone who is looking to participate in commercial real estate transactions in New York City. So whether that's an investor, developer, broker. Mm-hmm. And we offer a lot of things, but really the crack that we offer is we have a technology that pierces through the LLC that owns buildings
right.
to give you the actual owner's name, phone number, email, and address.
Interesting. So you were like the king of vertical SaaS or the queen of vertical SaaS.
Yes.
Restaurants to real estate tech.
Exactly.
All right. Before we dive into the topic, what is one thing on this podcast that no one will know about you?
There's probably a lot of things, all equally embarrassing. But the one I will pick is when I was growing up, I had a pet ferret, which is weird in its own sense. But
okay.
To make it even weirder, I had named it Babalu after the song Desi Arnaz when singing
Ooh.
I Love Lucy.
All right.
Babalu had a full wardrobe of clothes and a leash and would be walked around the neighborhood.
Very interesting. Yes, no one knew that about you. So let's jump in. SaaS pricing. This is a topic that a lot of founders get wrong early on. It is also extremely difficult. Generally, you're doing incorrect things like looking at your competition or doing all these fancy market research exercises. Many of them may or may not be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just kind of talk about some of the, and I know you have a lot of experiences, so sort of some of the initial frameworks that SaaS founders should be thinking about kind of before they go out and talk to the market. And even, let's take it sort of in the most general sense, but then if you have specific stories or experiences kind of articulating
sure.
it in that respect, it would be great.
I think the first thing that all SaaS founders should do is think about what the goal of their pricing strategy is before they jump into actually building out a framework. So when you're thinking about the goal is it maximization and are we looking to make the most money per customer or is it penetration and we're looking to get this in front of as many customers as possible and then, you know, land and expand.
Sure.
So deciding on your strategy and then basing your framework around that is the number one thing.
Got it.
When it comes to actual framework, the standard framework that you see now and, you know, the majority of SaaS startups, so 75-80% is your standard matrix format. So you have 3 or 4 different tiers or packages that you can get.
Right.
And each includes a certain number of features. I think the key things when you're looking at building this matrix or taking this matrix approach is really one, balancing simplicity and complexity. So people need to be able to understand why they're paying more for certain features.
Yep.
But it also can't be too simple because you want to make sure that you're providing yourself with enough upsell opportunities long term. Other things that are, you know, you see quite frequently are one, offering a trial. So the majority of SaaS startups now are offering a trial or some access to the product free to provide a larger audience with exposure initially. Other things you can see frequently too, or just as far as frameworks are, the sliding scale. So these are things that you see with companies who generally want to have a more complex structure than a matrix would allow. And it's based upon one factor or one indicator that grows as the customer's involvement with their product grows.
Sure.
So think about something like number of users, amount of storage being used,
yeah.
something that's volume-based and easy to measure.
Got it. And do you have any, I mean, just what frameworks have you used? Is it mostly matrix-driven or how do you kind of...
I've used almost exclusively matrix-driven pricing strategies before. The one exception I'll say is at Breadcrumb, when I was selling point-of-sale software, we sold two products, a point-of-sale product and also a payments processing product.
Got it.
The payments processing product was sold with, in theory, a sliding scale. The more transactions you did, you actually paid less per individual transaction.
Right.
That was difficult to communicate. So it was interesting, even though we made more money often on our actual matrix pricing, that was the thing that customers understood and therefore they were much more willing to sign on right away.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. I can imagine how that would be complex. So maybe in, just take Reonomy where you are now, sure. Fairly early stage company, what kind of framework or exercise or kind of initial research did you guys do to go out and think about pricing early on in the beginnings?
So the first thing we did is, one, we knew that we had a product that did have features that would allow us to pursue a tiered or matrix style approach. We had some features that offered additional value and we could calculate a clear ROI. So the first thing we wanted to do there was have an internal discussion about really looking at what value each feature delivers to our customers. Because no matter what pricing model you pursue, your price has to be based around one thing, and it's the value that delivers to your customers. You can look at competition, you can look at market research, all of these things, which will ultimately end up leading you down a path that will lead to inefficiencies long term.
Yep.
So looking at the value that the product delivers to your customers, how your market will utilize each of those individual features, how frequently they'll use them, what that allows them to accomplish, will allow you to start to think of, okay, these are the types of frameworks we want to pursue. What was interesting at Reonomy and also previous companies I've worked with is learning that once a customer has been exposed to a price, they'll never be able to give you an unbiased feedback around what they'd be willing to pay for something. So the key thing around the feedback process.
Why is that though?
It's impossible. Once you've seen the price for something, even it's, you know, the pair of jeans that you're wearing now.
Right.
If you saw at one point they were $79, I'll never be able to sell those to you for a dollar over that.
Right.
You'll never be able to say this is the value of that product to me because you know that you could get them at a lower cost.
Right.
So an important learning for me was keep a lot of your deliberation and your planning internal. Then when you go into beta, which I think most people just view as a period in product testing that you learn how people use the product, that's absolutely true.
Yep.
But it's also a great time to get feedback around pricing. So have someone who's using your product for free, who now understands the value it brings or delivers to their business, and then ask them and ask them several different questions about what they'd be willing to pay, type of value that delivered them. Because the reality is if Reonomy or any tool gave them, offer them some level of value that saves them $10,000 or 20 hours a week, then the product shouldn't cost $100 a month. It should cost something that's more in line and directly linked to that value it's providing the customer.
Got it. And more specifically, the early days here, you literally sat in a room and debated and thought through.
I think pricing is often considered something that's siloed within sales and marketing.
Yeah.
But our product and engineering teams helped drive that process just as much as anyone else did. And especially when you're talking about fine-tuning a product roadmap or looking at how specific actions will monetize features, it's important that every part of the organization is involved with that because that can change how engineering's prioritizing time.
Sure.
If they're going to spend time to reorganize a package for you instead of building a new feature, it better be really important and be backed up well.
Right.
So at Reonomy in particular, that pricing overall was a discussion between all of the departments. And I think that collaboration helped us really come to pricing packages that were clear and offered value to our customers in a way that was simple and easy to understand.
Got it. And were you, just walk me back for a point of clarification. You had already gotten the product in the hands of, you know, a couple customers, or was this before you even went out to market with the product?
We've done a few different things. So as far as trying new features, we will give people access to a new feature. So yep. Reonomy is released. We have a new feature. We rolled out a new export functionality that lets people just download more data. We have no assumptions around what a customer would be willing to pay for that, because we're not sure of the value yet. So we start to get customers engaged with that feature, interacting with it, and then ask them their willingness to pay for it, ask them what value it's delivering. And then that helps us then lead internal conversations to say, okay, how are we going to start shaping the price of this feature? Generally, I would say get people interacting with your product, whether that's beta testing for the initial rollout or if it's a new feature add-on down the road. Get that in market at no cost, so that you can get true, honest feedback about the product and people's willingness to pay. And then internally meet to talk about how that will impact long term. It's okay to tell those people it's only temporary, that they have access for free.
Right.
You can eventually monetize off of them.
Got it. And so maybe sort of once you have this initial pricing understood, going back to the kind of framework, right? So you do all the work internally, you know, at Reonomy, you've got your kind of research finished, you think you have the right idea, or at least you've talked to these early customers and you have the right idea. How do you kind of inform marketing and sales, and what did you at Reonomy do to ensure that, you know, sales and marketing and all these organizations were kind of beating to the same drum?
I think one, if you do not change pricing and constantly look at pricing to see if you did the right thing, you're doing something wrong, because it's highly unlikely that you got it right the first time.
Yep.
Informing your teams and then constantly looking at what you have out in the market is really, really important. From the sales and marketing side, on the sales side, I think training and education is the most important.
Okay.
So you're going to be tasking reps with pitching typically multiple packages in the SaaS world that have different feature sets. So not that it's wildly complex, but there's some moving pieces in it.
Yep.
So one, you need your reps and your sales team to understand why the prices were selected, what the goal of your pricing structure is, and how to communicate the differences between tiers to customers. Their ability to do that successfully will really drive how successful your company is.
Okay.
Additionally, you need them to be able to expand their pitch beyond simply a feature pitch. If it's just a feature pitch, then a customer could just go to the website. So training the reps on how to take the combination of your product and its pricing and take that into a benefit and value pitch, so that it takes it one level deeper, so that they understand and customers understand how this impacts me, because that's ultimately everyone cares about. That's really where we focus on the sales side. So it's heavy training, heavy education, and getting them the tools or resources that they need to then pass that information on to customers.
Got it. And kind of maybe the sales marketing or the marketing side, is it just kind of update your pricing page on the website, or it's probably not that
easy? It's a little more simple, a little more complicated than that.
Right.
So of course the normal things of build collateral, build email campaigns, build digital marketing campaigns for lead acquisition that include the new pricing.
The prices, yeah.
The pricing page on the website, I think, is a thing that I see most early SaaS founders struggle with, because it seems really simple. Hey, I have my main page, I have all these great feature pages or case studies, and then the pricing page tends to fall short. It's here's some prices, the feature matrix, and that's about it.
Yeah.
But the thing that I found interesting is an extremely common search query among many people looking at a new product is just the product's name or the company's name plus pricing.
Right, right, right.
So that will generally direct them immediately to the pricing page.
Yep.
That means all they're seeing is a feature grid and prices, which means they're not getting any of the value positioning or really the selling that they receive on other pages of the website.
Sure, yeah.
So my advice to early stage founders is, on your pricing page, resell everything that you sold on the other pages. This is another opportunity for you to convert a relatively cool lead to a more engaged person.
Sure, yeah.
So redeliver those same value propositions. And if worse comes to worse, if someone landed on your homepage and then went to the pricing page, you're just reiterating all the things that attracted them to your company in the first place.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So we have set the frameworks internally. We've got them out there in the market. You've informed sales. You've informed marketing. How do you guys keep up a kind of consistency of testing, and maybe sort of take this at the more granular level. What tools are you using? How frequently are you communicating? Because everybody knows, as you kind of said, you should consistently be talking to the customers and changing your prices. But what is like the actual mechanism that maybe Reonomy or Breadcrumb or whatever you use to do that?
Yeah, there's a few main channels, I think, within sales and marketing that you can successfully test, and you should constantly be A-B testing pricing and a variety of things.
Yeah.
So the first being simple as the website. I used Optimizely historically just to do A-B testing on the website to see how different pricing structures, as well as different visualizations of those same pricing structures, would impact conversion.
Right.
Something as simple as, what pricing package am I highlighting? What color is the CTA, or what words are on the CTA within each pricing package?
Got it.
All of those things can have a big impact on your ability to convert from the website. So okay. Use tools that allow you to track how those changes impact both traffic, but also conversion from those visits. Next would be email campaigns. Email campaigns I've used heavily. I firmly believe in using them for an outbound sales strategy.
Okay.
So that your BDRs or salespeople are calling on warmer leads as opposed to ice cold leads.
Right.
Email campaigns, subjects and the body of those emails impacts exactly the engagement you get from them. So work with different subject lines, different body and different text, and how you include pricing in all of those things to see how does that impact your open rates, your click-through rates, and then ultimately the people that enter your funnel from those emails.
Sure.
You can use a variety of softwares for that too. We've used, I've used everything from Yesware, Tout, MailChimp, HubSpot, everything. And they all work really, really well, and they're easy to use.
Yep. And then when you have all this data, do you guys sort of collect it every month and say, hey, check out, okay, this Optimizely page worked better than the other, or this email campaign? And then and kind of how do you sort of refresh things, I guess you could say?
Yeah, it definitely requires dedication, because you have to be constantly looking at individual changes and right. also disciplining yourself not to make too many changes at once, because if you change multiple variables, it's impossible to see what actually caused those changes.
I see, right.
So I think first thing is to be really organized and have someone help you manage all of those individual campaigns or tests. That's the first thing is important, to stay organized and
have a body that understands data.
Have someone who can understand data. It's really important. And don't be excited by trying too many things at once. Always are on the side that less is more within testing pricing. Next is be clear on what metrics or what data points you're looking to analyze, because you'll get a whole lot of data and you need to make sense of it. So depending on your initial goal, if it's revenue maximization, look at things like, ACV, payback period, total MRR ARR generated. If you're looking at market penetration, number of users, volume of leads, percent penetration, total opens. So figure out what channels you'll be testing through, what metrics you're looking to optimize around, and how your different tests impact those metrics in particular. I think a monthly cadence is generally good.
Okay, that makes sense. Something that comes up fairly frequently is sort of, you sort of alluded to this in the beginning around the trials and sort of giveaways. How do you, and this is highly personal to a lot of different people, but sort of how do you think about discounting maybe just the 30,000 foot view of when to use it, when you think it works, when it doesn't, all that kind of good stuff?
It's a really hard question, because I think, like a lot of things, discounting in certain instances with certain people and in certain amounts can be a really successful sales tool, and in other cases it can be a disaster.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, a right place at the right time and the right amount thing. Within discounting, I think, there's a variety of approaches I've used. At Bloomberg, the price is what it was. There was no discounting ever.
Yeah.
And the product's reputation and market penetration allowed it to do that. Whereas at Breadcrumb, we tried truly everything under the sun. I remember we did a $20.14 for the first 6 months of 2014. There was no reason behind that. We just thought it was a creative way to get people engaged.
Right.
I learned my lesson from that. So my theory now on discounting, I fall somewhere in the middle, which is discounting is not all bad. But you have to be clear on why is the discount being asked for. And I think that can come from two sources. The first is if the rep is the source of the discount. So if your sales rep says to you, hey, Mike, I need a discount either to solve a certain objection or just to shorten the natural sales cycle.
Yep.
If they're looking to solve a non-price objection by discounting, they need to go back to the sales process and revisit it.
Got it. Okay.
If the customer is looking for a feature, discounting won't solve the fact that you don't have a feature. So push back on the rep. If they're looking to shorten the natural sales cycle, what I mean by that is you're going on vacation. I know you're going on vacation. We're through the sales process. You're ready to roll, but it's going to take 2 weeks. sometimes some level of a discount can be an effective lever to get you come in before that. The other end of the spectrum is if it's the customer asking for the discount, and they generally fall into two buckets as well. One is if they're asking you to match a competitive price, which, just like I think it's a bad strategy with initial pricing structure, it's generally not a good structure and not a good strategy at the end.
Right.
The one thing that I think we all need to be honest with ourselves about is that all people just want to win. They want to get a deal, whether it's interacting with you, you're at the store. So most people will ask for a discount regardless, even if it's not that serious or if they're not that dead set on getting one.
Right.
So I think pick your situations where a discount would work. If the customer is just looking for a quick win, or the rep is looking to shorten the natural sales cycle. And then look for things that I would call discounts that aren't necessarily traditional discounts. And what I mean by that is you can offer things that give the customer that satisfaction of a win without slashing your list price. And that's really important because you want to protect your ability to keep price stable going forward. So like an example of that would be just, you know, offering an extra service or value without increasing the price. So at Reonomy, we offer exports to our customers. Maybe I'll throw in some extra exports if that's really important, or I'm looking for an urgency creator.
Right.
Or maybe you provide extra access without increasing price. So you have a big account that has 20 users. They're trying to negotiate with you on price. Give them one or two extra accounts.
Yeah, like, I'll give you 23 users.
Keep price the same. It ends up helping you anyway, because now you have extra evangelists at the company getting your product's name out there.
Right.
The last thing I would say is if you do have to discount, is be really mindful about how you manage your sales team around that. So, you know, I've dealt with plenty of reps who, as soon as you give them one or two discounts, they automatically resort to that. As soon as they face any blocker in the sales process, they're coming to you and saying, what can I offer this person? Because cutting the
price. Yeah, they just want to get a deal done. Yeah.
Will solve all of my problems.
Right.
So one is train your reps, your salespeople around why the revenue and why pricing integrity is so important.
Yep.
Two is build a comp plan that penalizes for discounting. So make sure your comp plan includes both dealer user count, also revenue generation in the inputs, so that if they discount, they're making less commission at the end of the month.
Yep.
And then finally, build processes that empower your team to make smart decisions around discounting. And what I mean by that is you want them to be able to decide if it's the appropriate situation to discount in. So something I did successfully at Breadcrumb was running a sales plan where reps had a flexibility to keep their book of business at a 97% of full price rate. And what I mean by that is, I said, hey guys, you can discount up to 3% on all of your closes for the entire month.
Yeah.
Maybe you choose that to land one key account that you give them a massive discount, or maybe you use that strategically at the end to give a few small discounts.
Yeah, that's smart.
It ensures that your overall revenue is the same, but it also empowers your reps and also just decreases a lot of the one-off requests that are going to hit your desk.
Right. And there's no outs that that's the policy no matter what.
To the, you know, hundredth
that's
of a
it.
Percent.
That's it.
Don't come crying at the end of the month. And you have to be firm with that.
Yeah.
If you give in, that 97 will become 92% and then 84%.
Yeah, you can't do that. Maybe a couple more questions. So managing, you know, you're a manager, obviously you have a sales team under you, a lot of AEs, a lot of SDRs grumble when there are, changes in pricing. Hey, I can't sell this too high, too low, whatever it is. How do you think about management as a senior leader in the company, you know, kind of specifically around pricing, and maybe advice for other sales VPs out there, or people who are thinking about this?
I think, you know, pricing is something that salespeople are the only people at the company that are responsible for communicating that externally.
Yep.
So in some ways, although they are the first to complain, we have to be sensitive to the fact that they have a pitch, they have a routine that they practice, and being able to master that material is important to them. So within, you know, managing a sales team through pricing changes, I think the first thing is manage expectations. I've done a lot better in situations where I've rolled out pricing and said, team, this is going to change, and it will probably change a few times. So I promise you that I'll let you know in advance. I'll tell you why. I'll train you, and I'll provide you with all the new collateral before we make those changes, but it's going to change. So managing expectations is key. Give notice, give them the right materials and training, And then finally is report back results. And I think this is probably the piece that falls off in a lot of sales organizations is if you change pricing three times and a rep is struggling or they have an off month, that will be the first thing they blame for their decline in revenue.
This is why I pose a question.
So report back those results to them. Explain what impact that's had on the business's overall revenue, what impact it's had on their commission, and what impact it's had on our ability to increase our footprint. It's okay too if those results aren't good. I think, you know, as a sales leader, it's your job to gain your employees' trust, and also you earn the right to test things that won't always work. If every test works, then you're not being aggressive enough with the test.
Right. Okay, that's great. Maybe sort of one last question that comes up a lot, and we're kind of round robining this at this point. Bad methods for pricing.
Sure.
A lot of bad advice out there. How do you coach the younger generation of founders on what not to do?
I think the number one thing I see that's probably the biggest mistake that over half of SaaS companies are doing is basing pricing exclusively off of how their competitors price their products.
Yeah.
Which is a bad trap to fall in, because one, it means that you have no control of your pricing for the future.
Right.
You're saying it's entirely dependent on what someone else says. So you have no ability to guarantee profitability, unit economics, all that goes out the window. So one, never base off of competitive pricing, because you are now giving up control of your ability to control the financials of your business. Other bad models are, you know, product cost plus X percent, or being told from customers what they want to pay specifically after they've already been paying something. I want a discount because of this reason.
Right.
So I think the number one thing I can say is avoid any pricing model or strategy. It's like some of the ones I just mentioned that take control away from you and give it to anyone else.
That's good advice.
Keep control in-house. And the best way you can do that is by constantly looking at your product and making sure it's as valuable as possible, which will then allow you to charge as much of it as possible.
Got it. One component of bad advice, or maybe good advice, I'm not really sure where I net out yet, is thinking about, and a lot of companies do this, just thinking about kind of the raw IT budget of their ideal customer profile and the buyer persona. Is that a good move, bad move? How do you kind of view that, let's say, when you're first setting up pricing, you know?
Yeah, I think it's an important thing when you're just working on building a product. So I think when you're in the very beginning phases and you're looking at market opportunity and addressable market size from a user count, also a potential revenue perspective, if you're building a product that's going to, you think will offer a lot of value, but those people have no budget, it can get into a sticky situation.
Right.
So I think that should come into play, and you should think about that before you even hire your first salesperson.
Right.
Once your salespeople are on board, though, it is important to think about budget from a perspective of timing and sales cycle. So I'll use an example of who I'm selling to. Say I'm selling to a bank, whether it was Bloomberg, Reonomy. One, I know that they have a pretty good budget.
Yeah, budget, right.
I'm not that concerned. I know that if I show that this product will offer a strong ROI, if it will they'll get it. But what I do need to consider is the sales cycle. And depending on the customer, what department I'm working with and what type of customer, it can have a pretty large impact on the actual sales cycle.
Got it.
So I would say don't be so focused on, hey, do I need to price based off of budget? You price off of ROI and they'll find space in the budget to pay for it. They might not get the whole product at once. They might get a lesser version. They might only get a few accounts, a few users.
Yeah.
They might introduce it slowly because they need to start actually seeing that ROI before they make a larger investment.
Sure.
But that's okay. You know, you can do the land and expand strategy there. But be conscious of sales cycle. If you're selling into someone and if it's a higher price point and they have a lower budget, it's going to take sometimes quarters of approval, especially on the enterprise side.
Perfect. Okay, we're almost at the end of the line. Any final thoughts, any tips, any tricks if we kind of bottle up this discussion for the listeners?
Sure. I think number one thing would be don't leave money on the table. If your product offers a lot of value, whether it's time saving, money saving, helps you produce more, then how much you charge should be directly linked to that, and make sure your customers and your employees understand that. It's really important. And then the final thing would just be, you know, to not overcomplicate your pricing structure. Don't get analysis paralysis. Make sure that you have something that's simple and easy to understand while still offering your company upsell potential in the future.
Got it. Thank you very much, Liz, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
It's been great. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you for downloading this Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. Bowery Capital is a business software-focused venture capital firm specializing in helping our founders build initial revenue traction. For more information, please visit us online at bowerycap.com/blog.